session number 21553, Rule 1.
Doris Venables, Rule 1. Doris, can you tell me when and where you were born, please?
I was born in Plymouth on the 10th of January 1919.
And what did your father do for a living?
He worked all his life, nearly all his life, for charity. He was a YMCA worker.
And your mother?
She was a housewife. She didn't work. She was very artistic. She was trained in an art school.
Did she paint?
Yes, a bit.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one brother, older than me.
How old?
2.5 years older.
And what was Plymouth like at that point?
Well, I don't know, because I left when I was 18 months old.
Where did you go?
We then went to Ipswich, where we lived until I was 12, and then moved to Leicester.
Was it in the nature of your father's work that you...
Yes, that's right. He was divisional secretary for the YMCA. He ran the whole of the Eastern Counties divisions in when we were in Ipswich. And then in Leicester, he ran the Leicester YMCA, which was quite a big affair, and a sort of local one.
How were they organised, the YMCAs, in those days?
Well, I think they were very much organised all different parts of the country. When he was the divisional secretary, he did a lot of raising money and visited people who might be interested to contribute. And of course they set up hostels and did all sorts of things for the youth. They had football teams. He was a great football player, and cricket teams. And he was very keen on both of those.
What about yourself? Are you interested in sport?
Yes, I am. But my brother wasn't.
What was your brother's interest?
Well, he was much more sort of intellectual. And from the word go, he was a very clever little boy. And I think he felt he was a disappointment to my father. But he did his best and he went in for long distance running. I think he just had no ball sense. You know, he couldn't catch a ball as I could.
And what were your sports? What were your favourites?
Oh, hockey at school. I loved hockey. And tennis, really. Just those two, because you played just one major game and you didn't play the others much.
And what about your education? Where were you educated?
Well, in Ipswich I was educated at a secondary school or grammar school, and the same in Leicester. I went to a grammar school in Leicester.
What was the school like?
The one in Ipswich was very friendly and very nice, and I had a very nice time there, and very easygoing, not very academic. In Leicester, it was much more high-powered. Everybody did very well academically, or nearly everybody. And it was run by a very snobbish headmistress. So it was rather an unhappy school, actually.
With the school, what was the aim and intention, really, of the grammar schools at that time? Was it to educate a certain number of children from the area, or was it more of a scholarship-based sort of thing?
Well, it was some girls were scholarship girls. I don't know what proportion. Some got free places, and I think the majority paid, but not much.
Did you have to pass the 11 plus at that time, or was it something else?
I was a paying pupil, and you just asked for a place, and I think the school at Ipswich sent in some sort of report, and I was accepted at the age of 12 it was the Wiggiston Grammar School, which was quite a well-known one.
And what were your favourite academic subjects?
Oh, on the arts side, history, English, languages.
Do you think you got some of that from your mother's side?
And art. But my father insisted I did Latin in case I wanted to go to the university, because in those days you had to have some Latin to go to the university. So I had to give up art and did art. They called it art for pleasure.
What did you think of the Latin?
I can't remember, really. I don't think I was very good at it, but if you sat down and learnt it, you could pass. And everybody in my form, I was in an A stream, everybody passed matric, and I think 18 out of 21 passed matric with honours. So it was academic and rather pushy and rather snobby. For instance, we were told never to talk to an ice cream man. But how we got ice creams, I don't know.
Was that led by the headmistress then?
Yes, it was her. It was above all her. And the staff were rather unhappy, I think.
Was it the only grammar school in the area?
No, there were quite a few grammar schools. In Leicester was a big place and a wealthy place. I think it was full of light industry and I think quite snobbish in a way. There's a lot of rather wealthy people in Leicester.
At that time, had you noticed any, because in the 1930s obviously there was the Depression, was there any sort of economic problems in Leicester? Or was it?
I don't think there was very much, but I didn't really. I think in Leicester it was one of the few places that thrived during that time.
And at this time, obviously, there was the growth of fascism on the continent.
Yeah.
Were you aware of this?
Oh, yes. Yes. Because we used to discuss things at school and have debating societies and things. And I remember we had a debate about Hitler in quite the early days, and at first we thought that he did quite a lot for Germany. But later one realised that there was another side to it.
What was the general political leanings, really, of your classmates at that time?
I think they were mostly right-wing.
Was that something to do with the nature of the school, would you say?
I think it was partly the headmistress, partly the nature of the school, and partly I think Leicester was full of fairly wealthy people and they tended to be more right-wing. I mean, I wasn't, personally. But there weren't many of us who weren't.
Was that... you just mentioned the wealth. How did that manifest itself with their opinions towards, say, the Nazis? At that time.
I think they didn't approve of the Nazis. But I didn't really discuss it with the mistresses didn't really push their political views on us much.
What about amongst your fellow schoolmates? They would debate it and discuss what they'd read in the newspapers?
A bit, yes. I think less than in boys' schools. I think my husband knew far more about it than I did. But also at home, we talked quite a lot. My mother was very anti-war, and my brother was very interested and very knowledgeable about it all, too.
Had your brother... where had he gained his knowledge from?
Well, partly from reading and school, and partly from my parents, I think.
And at that time, obviously, there was a Spanish Civil War, which was really the first kind of clash between ideologies.
Yes.
What did you know of that at the time?
Oh, quite a bit. I thought they were all quite heroic to go out and fight there. But I didn't personally know anyone who did.
Was there a lot of information about the war?
What, the Spanish Civil War? I expect there was, but I was then sort of a teenager and really more interested in the next hockey match, I think.
What about your brother?
Well, he was always more interested than I was in politics. He knew a lot, and he went to the grammar school, the Wiggiston Boys Grammar School, which was the brother school of mine, and he had a very, very good history teacher. And he got a scholarship to Cambridge, which was quite quite good in those days.
At this time, were you aware of the plight of the Jews in Germany?
Oh yes, because we had a mother and son who came to live with us. I think my father was quite very interested in it. I don't quite know what he did, but he certainly knew organisations that got Jews over from Germany. So we had this lady and her son who lived with us for quite a few months until in the end she found a job and she got a house and moved out with her son.
Did she explain to you what had happened in Germany at all?
Well, she didn't talk to me much about it. She might have done to my parents.
And you said you didn't know much about it, but what type of activities would your father have been involved in?
What for?
Helping refugees.
I really don't know. I don't know how he found this lady. I mean, he didn't talk about it very much.
Was it through the YMCA? Or?
It could have been, I should think. Or he was... he knew quite a lot of people in Leicester. He was quite knowledgeable, and I think it was after the war. He became a JP, so he was quite well known.
At that time, obviously, there was the Munich crisis as well in 1938.
Yes.
Do you remember that at all?
Yes, I do, yes.
What do you remember?
Well, I remember that I just hoped there wouldn't be a war. And I was rather relieved there wasn't, which I think was, you know, now people say we knew we should have gone to war then. But quite honestly, I'm slightly ashamed to say I didn't want to go to war.
Was that the general feeling?
I think there was a relief that there wasn't a war. I think it might have been because... After all, a war, I just thought we'd all die if we went to war.
Were people particularly worried about any aspects of a forthcoming war? I'm thinking along the lines, were they worried about aircraft or gas?
Oh, yes, yes, because we were told that bombs were much, much more powerful than they had been and that cities would be bombed, which happened, of course.
When did you leave school?
1938, when I was 18.
And where did you go?
I went to Leicester University.
Can you tell me something about Leicester University at that time?
Well, it was a great release from school. I loved it. It was somehow one was free to say what you wanted and talk to ice cream men. But not that I obeyed that rule. You know, it was just a release and a very nice... It was a very small, friendly little university. And the people who taught us took a great interest in us. I wasn't very academic. I think I got an exhibition there, which paid my fees. But it was really that I didn't know what to do. And my father simply said, well... Here's a university on the doorstep, why not go there? And you can think more what you want to do, and I did that. And it was a very nice time, and of course I met my husband there.
What were you studying?
I started off by wanting to do a French honours degree, but we did an exam which was a subsidiary, I think, and you had to pass that first, and I didn't pass that. I mean, I'm really not very academic. So they suggested I did a general degree, which was not an honours degree, a pass degree in three subjects, which was English, French and history. And that suited me much better.
At that time, was it unusual or usual for women to go to university after school?
It was a little bit unusual. I think one or two of my mother's friends told her she was wasting her money and all I would do would be just get married and that would be that. And I think also when I had a degree and when I was not so much at the university with fellow students, of course, but with people outside, I rather kept quiet about being a graduate because it was looked on as rather unattractive and blue stockingy.
Did you have any ideas of what you wanted to do when you'd left university?
No, I think my chief aim, which used to annoy my schoolmistresses always, was I wanted to get married and have a family.
Why did it annoy them?
Because I think they thought I should be a career girl. But I wasn't.
So where did you meet your husband?
At the university, at Leicester University. I was there a year before him because I'm 18 months older than him.
How did you meet him?
I can't remember when. I suppose we were all together because it was very small. And we just met, I suppose, everybody there. And he was one of them.
So we come into 1939.
Yes.
Was there any feeling that the war was again an issue?
Oh, yes. It was very much in the air all the time then. I think I desperately hoped there wouldn't be a war. But I think we knew almost then it was inevitable.
And did you listen to Neville Chamberlain's speech on the outbreak of war?
I think I did, probably, yes.
What did you feel about that?
What, when war was declared? I just thought I would never live through it. And I remember listening in the dining room, and there was a very stout dining room table, and thinking, well, that will be something to go under when the bombs come.
Who were you listening to the speech with?
My parents, I think.
What was their reaction?
I think they were very sad, really. They were not... But again, they knew it was coming.
And were there any restrictions that started immediately after the...
Well, the blackout. I think everybody made black linings to their curtains so that you didn't show a chink of light through your windows.
Did you make blackout curtains?
I don't know whether I did personally. My mother did, I think.
And how was that enforced?
I think there were air raid wardens. I think there were people who came round and looked in the streets. And if you showed light, you did get in... You were told promptly to do something, and if you didn't, I guess you got into trouble.
Did you have any other precautions?
We were issued with gas masks, I think.
Did you practice wearing your gas mask?
Not much, I think.
Well, nothing seemed to happen very much in that first period. It's
no,
as the phony war.
It was odd, yes.
What was people's reactions at that time with, although being at war, but nothing happening?
I think it was a bit unreal. It was strange. But I was then in love, so my main thoughts were on my husband. Also, I knew my brother was a member of the Peace Pledge Union in Cambridge, which was quite strong there. And I knew that he was going to refuse to fight. And that was a slight worry, I think.
Did he refuse to fight?
Yes. Yes, he did. He would have joined the RAMC. He would have done anything, but not actually agree to go and kill somebody.
So what happened to him?
He went up before a tribunal, and he was... Well, first, he'd left Cambridge, and he took a civil service exam and came out quite high in the civil service exam. But then he was called up and he went before a tribunal and he was told he couldn't join the RAMC, he must do agricultural work. And some work cropped up. There was a group went to Jersey, so he went off to Jersey.
How did your family feel about that?
Well, worried, but we respected his views. And my mother, I think, would have held the same views. I didn't, personally, but we had no sort of... Most of my friends were students, and in the student population, it was very much discussed whether it was right to fight or not. And people understood that point of view.
You said you didn't hold the same views. What views did you hold?
Well, I felt that Hitler was evil. We knew then that he was, and we'd heard things about the Kristallnacht and had seen Jews who'd fled, and quite a lot of news came through. And also he'd invaded other countries, and I felt the only way was to stop him with force.
How had the war affected the university?
I suppose a bit, but I think everybody sort of held their breath during the phony war, waiting to see what would happen.
Did anything change as you moved into 1940?
Well, the invasion of France, of course, was the first indication, I think. And then we realised that it was a serious matter, you know.
What was the reaction to things like the fall of France and the evacuation at Dunkirk?
Oh, I suppose great worry or horror. I mean, it became a very serious and nasty affair.
Was there an impression that it was getting closer, in a sense?
Yes. I think at that time there was quite a feeling that they might try and invade England.
Did that affect the student population at all?
I'm sure it did, but we sort of got on with it. But I think there was a feeling that our studies, in a way, were more and more irrelevant. I mean, I took finals during 1940, and I just felt it didn't really matter what I did. It made so little difference to life. Whether I got a degree or not was almost irrelevant.
Would that have been a general feeling, do you think, among students?
I think so, yes.
Had their attitudes changed from the debating period when you were discussing the potential of war before it broke out and that period? Had student attitudes changed at all?
Not very much. I think quite a few who took the pacifist view. I know quite a lot from Cambridge, where it was quite strong. I think a lot changed and went off to war, because I think they thought that this was the only way. But they thought about it very seriously, and if you held the opposite view, they thought no less of you amongst the students.
And at this stage, there would have been rationing introduced. What was the manifestations of rationing being introduced?
Well, just accepted, I think. I mean, you realised that there were going to be shortages, and everybody accepted that.
What types of shortages were there?
There was rations on butter and meat, sweets. We had coupons for sweets. We had a whole lot of coupons for food. And eggs, things simply you couldn't get. And I remember some things were not on rations, and I think pork pies were some that weren't. And I remember queuing a long time in Leicester to get a Melton Mowbray pork pie, because they were very good pork pies.
Did you supplement your rations in any other way?
Well, you couldn't really, unless you had access to the black market or kept hens, I suppose you could. But, you see, I was only at home for, well, I suppose, a year with rationing, and then I went into the Wrens, and then the whole thing was taken over by them, really.
So how did that come about, you joining the Wrens?
Well, when I left the university, I thought I would like to do something not just pursue, I don't know that I could have pursued my own choice of career if I'd wanted to, but anyway, I thought I wanted to do something towards the war effort, and I had a romantic view of what I wanted to do and thought I would be a Red Cross nurse like Vera Brittain, the Testament of Youth, but that didn't work out at all. I did it for 2 months in a local hospital. I did all the exams for the Red Cross and got qualified, but realised that if I really wanted to nurse... You see, I think at that time they thought there would be a lot of servicemen wounded in all the hospitals in the country, including Leicester, which was a long way from the coast, of course. But it didn't happen then. And I went to a very Dickensian-type hospital in Leicester and was rather horrified at what happened there and realised that if I really wanted to nurse, I'd have to do a training for 3 years and become a state-registered nurse. And I didn't really want to do that.
What were the conditions like in the hospital?
Well, they were run on terribly regimental lines and very old-fashioned ideas. I mean, for instance, there was a little girl dying of leukemia and I was on the ward and there was really nothing to do. We'd done everything that needed doing. There was no particular crisis or anything. So I sat on her bed and started reading a story to her. And the staff nurse or sister came round. "Nurse, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm just reading." "Well, that won't do. Find something to do. Get up and find something to do." And I had to abandon that and leave the little girl. And there really wasn't anything to do. The whole ward was clean. I mean, it was kept extremely clean and very efficient, and the whole thing was very, very efficient. It wasn't really very nice in those circumstances, trying to nurse people.
Was there a more regimented attitude to nursing then?
Terribly regimented, yes. I mean, if a doctor came by, we had a friend who was a doctor, and I saw him once walking down the passage and said hello to him, and I was pushed back to the wall by the sister. "You don't speak to doctors." I mean, it's so different now.
So you did that for 3 months after you'd finished?
I did it for about 2 months only, I think, and then I resigned. And the matron was really horrible, told me I had let down the country or something, and this was not on. But I couldn't go on like that. I was just wasting my time, I felt. I mean, I couldn't nurse as one would have humanly thought it should be done. And I was going to dole out cups of tea and make beds or tidy linen cupboards, and I thought that was silly. And I could do something better than that.